I was getting to that place in my life where we're bad about for years and years of our ego telling us, hey, we can do this or we can do that. Or you watch a movie and you see the hero and you're like, yeah, that would be me. Like I would be the guy that ran across the desert with no water and like saved the world, you know? And we never test that. And I had found a way to test it. And I like, there was definitely a lot of discouragement coming out of the Georgia Jewel, but at the same time, there was that, all right, I found it. Let's see if I can change it. Cause if I could change that, I could change anything else about my life. Right. So I found a way to measure, can I change my life or not? Can I change who I am or not?
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Dave Daniel. Dave is a man who likes to find out his limits, find where they are, and then work to improve them. He has got a great story. He's got a great journey in ultramarathon running and some good insights and lessons along the way. Hope you enjoy my conversation with Dave Daniel. That was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, but so.
Yeah, that was actually, I was part of the very first basic course that he did. So last June, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I usually start off by asking kind of how did you get started as a runner? Well, first of all, can I tell a little bit about who you are and what you do? And
I live in Charlotte. I own a small roofing company, so just blue collar construction kind of work. And that's about all there is to me. Hang out with my nieces and nephews.
I saw one of your pictures on Instagram. Do you do steel roofing then too?
We do, yeah. All types. And right now, like especially with metal prices, the market's going pretty crazy. So it's quite an interesting line of work to be in at the moment.
Yeah. There's not too here in Kansas City. There's a few people that do that, but not. It's asphalt is kind of the thing that everybody.
Yeah, does. It's hard to find people that are willing to do that kind of work.
Yeah. That's true. It's true. But the metal roofs always look cool. I have always appreciated how they look.
Yeah, they are they're one of the most beautiful roof systems you'll see when they're done right.
Yeah,
they look really nice.
Yeah, that's cool. So, how did you get started as a runner?
So quite haphazardly. It's funny that we were talking about work. When I started the company, I was out on the job sites doing the work myself all the time, and it's.
Yeah.
Like a high physical demand.
Yeah.
And so I did that for years. And then as the company grew, I got to where I was working more in the office and became very sedentary very suddenly and kept my eating habits. Maybe they got even a little bit worse than they were prior and ended up gaining a lot of weight, getting just out of shape over a couple, 3 or 4 years. And like the end of 2019, beginning of 2020, I realized what I was doing wasn't really netting the life that I wanted. So I started changing my eating patterns, started working out very consistently and things of that nature, and dropped a lot of weight and got into good enough shape that I could do something like Chad Wright's backpacking course. And applied for that just because it's something I always wanted to do is go out backpacking, and I never knew how, and it seemed like a great way to get introduced to it. And while we were out there, there were two or three ultra runners that went with us. Obviously Chad is an ultra runner as well. And being around them, like talking to them, hearing the kind of stuff they did, it was the first time I had even heard of an ultra. I had no idea what it was. I always looked at a marathon, was like, that was the holy grail of long runs. Little did I know. So on that trip, we climbed some pretty tough mountains and covered a good many miles. So it was stretching me, like what I was capable of doing. And they kind of showed us some techniques and shared with us some stuff like he had done through his military service to push through, right? To not get overwhelmed by the big picture and take it a little bit at a time and things of that nature, and how to process it all mentally. So I got out of that, came back from that course, and I'd always wanted to do a marathon. And you know how we do, especially when our egos are never really checked. We think we can do amazing things and we just believe that of ourselves, but we never really test whether or not we can.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I was good at that for most of my life.
Right. And I was like, why not? I'm just going to do the 26.2 miles and see what it takes. Cause I had no idea. And I think the only run I'd ever really done was a 5K literally 10 years prior to that. And that wiped me out. So I just picked a Saturday about four or five weeks after the basic course and put it on my calendar that I was going to run a marathon. And I was going to do it at the track at the high school right up from my house. And they end up closing it because of COVID. Blessing in disguise, because running a marathon on an asphalt circle would in the mid-July,
yeah.
that would have been brutal. So I went to the park up the road from my house, and they had some nice trails cut through the woods. And I found like a 1.1 mile loop, and I just ran it, and I'd go all the way around and back to my truck. I'd get a snack, get some more water, whatever. I'd run it again and run it again. And it took me 9.5 hours to do that marathon. I couldn't walk for like 2 days afterwards. Yeah. The 5 or 6 toenails I had left after the basic course came off over the subsequent week. And it was cool because it was definitely exhausting. But sorry, I got a nephew here with me. He just walked in. it was exhausting, but it showed me what I could do. And it was like I decided to try a thing and tested myself, and like I completed it, but it was a lot harder than I thought it was gonna be. But completing that, like picking a hard thing and doing it, for the next week, 2 weeks, I was just riding this high of self-belief increase, self-image increase, because I committed to do a thing that was really hard and I stuck to it, even though I didn't want to, and I completed it, and it was an amazing feeling. So, as I was running this marathon in the park, you know, I had been pretty active on Instagram, like a third, you know, just nothing better to do. So I would post it up on my story on Instagram and tag some of my buddies from the basic course who are runners, because they'd been telling me about races. And I'm like, oh yeah, look, I'm doing it. And, they sent me a lot of encouragement along the way, but one of them, once I finished up, he's like, if you can do this, me and a buddy run this hike across Atlanta, where they go up and down Stone Mountain. They hike all the way across Atlanta. They go up and down Kennesaw Mountain, and then they all go home. And it's about 40 miles and two mountains, but they take all day to do it. So I'm like, yeah, that'd be great. Drove down to Atlanta and just got a hotel for the night and met them all in the morning, like 4:30 in the morning, out at Stone Mountain. And it was a massive group. I think it was 37 people showed up to do this. And the guy that organized it showed up, and he just gave a little, hey, this is why we do it, and we're going to hike across Atlanta and build some belief, and that's it. So we took off across Atlanta, and I ended up in about 15 hours, hiked all the way across Atlanta and did 4 mountain peaks up and down the mountain. And we got done with it. And as you'd go, like you'd walk beside somebody for an hour, hour and a half, really get to know somebody, and then you'd move on and meet somebody else. And so the community was great, but then we got done and we got to like cheer everybody on as they finally made it up the mountain. And the energy was very like uplifting. And I got done, I just, again, on this high of, hey, I just did this massively hard thing. I felt good. So we got done. I was like, I could have done more. I remember feeling like I'm exhausted, but I could have done more. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of us went to brunch the next day. And one of the guys I'd met on the hike, we were talking, we were getting to know each other. And he's like, "Hey, I've signed up for this ultra, next month in September." And he's my buddy Watts. And we've run a few ultras together at this point, but he said, "There's this ultra. And, you know, if you're crazy enough to come do this and you did it this well, then, you know, why don't you come run it with me?" I'm like, "Well, what's an ultra?" He's like, "Well, it's a 100-mile race. It's called the Georgia Jewel. It's like 14,000 feet of elevation, and they give you 36 hours to do it." So I did the math of the 45 miles and like the 8,000 feet of elevation I'd done the day prior, and took me 15 hours. I added that up. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm sure I could do double that in, you know, the space of, you know, 32, 33 hours, no problem." So I signed up for it. And it went from the basic course to a month later, the marathon, to a month later, the Atlanta hike, to a month later, the Georgia Jewel 100 miler. Okay.
So is the Georgia Jewel the same one as they call the Cruel Jewel?
It is not.
Okay.
It's one in Dalton, Georgia.
Okay.
It's similar, but the Cruel Jewel I hear is a good bit harder. It's a bit more gnarly.
Yeah, which is why they call it the Cruel Jewel.
So, for sure.
So the similar names, I wonder if the race director is the same. So,
yeah, I've had a couple friends that have ran the Cruel Jewel, and the videos coming out of it are pretty wild. And the weekend they ran it, there was a massive storm and trails flooding out. And
yeah,
stuff.
It can be brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was my first ultra, getting into the Georgia Jewel, and my training for it was a couple 3-mile runs and, you know, some mountain biking. That was a stretch for me. Like, I'd do 15 miles or so on the mountain bike and I'd be exhausted. But that was my training, and I showed up to the Georgia Jewel, and I caught like an hour and a half of traffic. So I got there a little bit late, stressed out, had enough time to stress a little bit, throw my stuff together. I didn't know what a drop bag was, so I just threw a bunch of random stuff in a bunch of gallon Ziploc bags and gave them to the guy. I'm like, "I'm not sure, but here you go." And the plan I had in my head looked nothing like what an actual ultra racing event looked like. So
what was the plan? What plan did you have in your head?
I didn't even know what an aid station was. So he had told me about, like, there's this many aid stations and you have this many drop bags and, you know, this and that. And the numbers, you know, there was less drop bags than there were aid stations. And I had the order in my mind wrong from what the order actually was. So I had, like, numbered the sequence of bags depending on night and day and what I thought I would need. And they were all mixed up. So I showed up and grabbed the day bag and I'd need my night bag, you know. It was a mess. I had no clue what I was doing. So when you head out for the Georgia Jewel, you go up and down these two mountain peaks and you hit an aid station, then you go up this one mountain that it literally stone steps just carved out of the cliff face. And I remember we started at 4 o'clock Friday. We take off, you know, running a moderate pace, but still more faster than I should have been going. And it's getting dark. We get through the first aid station and start going up these stone steps by headlamp. And I was already starting to get burnt out. We're only a few miles in at this point. And I couldn't keep up with my buddy Watts. He was running it. I couldn't keep up with him just walking up the steps. And I started overeating, got my stomach all messed up. And the first time cutoff was like 32 miles in. And we got through the first 20-ish. And those last 12 miles, I fought and fought to make the time cutoff. I was checking my phone. I was getting down to a few minutes. And I made it with like 12 minutes to spare or something. And then after that, it's like an out and back, but you go out and there's a figure eight that you run twice and you come back. So we gotten out of that figure eight and we've got into it. And my buddy Watts, we kind of said our goodbyes because he was keeping a lot better pace than I was. He went on and I trudged through that and trudged through it. And I found where my limit was. I got through all those, figure eights, hit the 68-ish mile mark and started back. And when I started going back up the mountain, I couldn't go. Like, I had no fuel left. And I fought tooth and nail up that one down and then back up a second one. And I'm at that point, there was like a little water fill station. And they're like, yeah, you pretty much missed the time cutoff, but we can't like do anything for you here. You got to go down to the next station. And that was going down those granite steps. And I remember I was hallucinating so bad. And I would take a step down onto the step, and my leg would give out as soon as I put weight on it. And so I'd have to like hold the handrail and kind of like Spider-Man down the steps so I didn't fall. And the sweepers caught up with me, and they load me in a car. They take me back to the parking lot. And I literally just rolled out, crawled to my truck, and threw up all over the sidewalk behind my truck. And I DNF'd at, 72-ish miles in, 75 miles in, mm-hmm. 10,000 feet of elevation. And I found my limit. And it bruised my ego a little bit, but it lit a fire of, there's my limit. Now let me see if I can move it. And that's kind of kicked off my ultra running journey of the last few years.
So you went from, and you weren't really a runner before. I mean, you said you weren't even really backpacking a lot. You said you wanted to learn how to backpack when you went to Chad's.
No,
to Chad's workshop.
Yeah, Chad's was my first backpacking trip.
And ever. Chad Wright, he's a former Navy SEAL, and he's got a podcast, and three of seven podcasts. So he's got a course where you go out and he'll teach you woodcraft and navigation. And so you'd done the backpacking. And so were you like doing any kind of workouts or anything before you like took Chad's course, or did you just like jump in? And
I was, okay. So earlier in that year, so I had gotten up when I was working, I'd gone to work in the office. I'd gotten up like 270 pounds, and I'm like 5'10" ish. So it wasn't a good look or good shape for me. And I had started fixing my eating and lost some weight. And then the beginning of 2020, I had started doing just very minimal workouts just to get some kind of momentum. Mm-hmm. And I'd built that into like a pretty consistent workout. Every morning I was doing something, some pull-ups, some push-ups, some, you know, squats, things of that nature. And that put me in a good enough shape to be able to do Chad's course. But I was never a runner other than that one 5K that I ran like 10 years prior to.
So you really like jumped in, like, because from going to not running to running a marathon to, yeah, that's a pretty steep.
Yeah. And I think I feel like because I had a base of a lot of years in manual labor and doing that work outside, that I was already acclimated to it a little bit, but I had definitely softened up a lot from the three, four years that I'd been working in an office.
Yeah. So what was your, I mean, you said you had your ego bruised a little bit. How did you, go from taking that and, because some people would say, there's my limit, that's the best I can do, and kind of roll back. But you decided to use that as fuel. What was your kind of thinking to get yourself motivated to keep going?
I'm stubborn. I'm really stubborn. I don't like being defeated, if you will. And I was getting to that place in my life where we're bad about for years and years of our ego telling us, hey, we can do this or we can do that. Or you watch a movie and you see the hero and you're like, yeah, that would be me. Like, I would be the guy that ran across the desert with no water and like saved the world, and we never test that. And I had found a way to test it. And I like, there was definitely a lot of discouragement coming out of the Georgia Jewel, but at the same time, there was that, all right, I found it. Let's see if I can change it. Cause if I could change that, I could change anything else about my life. Right. Mm-hmm. So I found a way to measure, can I change my life or not? Can I change who I am or not? Mm-hmm.
That's cool. So, and you, then you went on beyond that then. And I know you've gotten into doing some other things. What was it? What was that?
Yeah.
What did you, what, and did you like make a plan after the Cruel Jewel or the Georgia Jewel? Did you make a plan for how to improve that?
Well, I met some really cool people there. One of them is a runner in Florida. Her name's Cass. And we had been talking because I knew nothing about races. I didn't even know 100-mile races existed a couple months prior. So I was talking to her and I was like, I need to find a 100-mile race that's flat, like no elevation, so I can check one box and then we'll add some elevation in and check another box. But just simplify it a little bit. And she told me about the long haul down in Tampa area, which is nearby where she lived. And that was January of 2021. I did that one. I did the Lookout Mountain 50 miler with my buddy Watts in December. And that was kind of my comeback from Georgia Jewel. But I had planned the long haul first. I did that one and I completed it. And it's 50 miles and 12 hours, like 8,000 feet of elevation, something like that. I completed it, but I completed it like 45 minutes after the time limit. So I didn't get a DNF. They gave me the medal, but they didn't track my results for it at all.
Yeah.
So, but that was improvement for me. That was momentum. Like I DNF'd the last one. Now I found like, hey, I could do this one and complete it. Maybe I didn't hit the time, but like that's closer.
So the cutoff, you said you did it in 12 hours and it was still beyond the cutoff?
No, the cutoff was 12 or 13 hours. It may have been 13 hours, I think. And I did it in like 13 hours and 40 minutes.
For 50 miles, that's a pretty steep cutoff. I mean, that's...
I learned that later, yes.
I would look at that and go like, no, there's...
I could be a little bit off on that. I could be misremembering, but I'm pretty sure it was like 13 hours. I finished that one, but didn't make the time. And then I went down and did the long haul. And the long haul was a good race for me because my friend Cass came up. She hosted me down there. She came out and crewed me and she paced me for a lot of miles. But it's a little cross and you always come back to that center section every 2.5 or 5 miles. The longest leg is 5 miles. So you're always passing somebody or beside somebody. You don't get left in the back because there's always people around. So I was able to interact with those people. And I learned like how supportive other racers are when they see you out there. They're always cheering you on. There's not many people out there that are angry. So it was a lot of encouragement, a lot of positivity. And I was able to keep going and keep going. And I walked in the last, you know, fair bit of miles. I'd sprained my ankle like somewhere around mile 62. And I took a nap for like 10 minutes at one point, at like mile 80 something. And Cass was so great because she kept just chasing me with food because I wasn't eating nearly enough. So she, every time I come in, she put some kind of food in my hand. She's like, just eat it. And I like eat two or three bites. And as soon as she wasn't looking, you know, I like toss it. but she ran the last like 40 miles with me. And I remember making that last loop and coming around the corner where I could see the finish line. I just heard bawling. I was like, I was finally there. I was finally done it. And it took me almost 30 hours to do 100 flat miles, but I'd finally completed one. I completed it within the time. And that was massive for me because it built my belief that I could do more. And it built my belief that if I had a thing going on in my life or something I was doing, I didn't like, I could change that because I trained some, I tried harder, I had a better plan and I was able to change my end result. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was exciting for me. And that was January of 2021. And in February, I did the calendar challenge where you run a mile for the date on the calendar. So the 1st of February, you run 1 mile, the 2nd, you run 2 miles, so on and so forth. And I did that with my buddy Watts, the guy that invited me to my first ultra. And he lives in Atlanta. I live in Charlotte. So we were calling each other back and forth. We were, you know, shooting each other messages on Instagram, and we kind of just paired up and did this thing. And I ended up doing 411 miles in February. Like the last 4 days, you're running a marathon every day. And I pulled it off, and the last week was exhausting, but again, I picked something hard to do and I did it, and I felt amazing afterwards. So, I think that's been the kind of recurring theme, is finding the limit and then figuring out how to move my limit, because I have, like, in every area of life, I have right now the result of what I do, you know, every day. The average of my last 30 days has netted me my current abilities and place in life. So if I want to change that, I can change it. I just change what I do every day.
I'll continue my conversation with Dave Daniel in just a minute. But first, I'd like to take a chance to tell you a little bit about what I do as a mindset coach. I tell people that I help them to get to their epic thing. Now, your epic thing is that dream, you know, that dream you put away in the corner of your mind and you told yourself, someday, I'll get to do it. Well, a lot of the stories that you hear on this podcast are people who decided that they had enough, that they're going to go after their epic goals and test their limits, and to not only test their limits, but to expand them and keep going, kind of like that Dave Daniel has been talking about. The mindset that you need to run an ultramarathon is the same mindset you need for any big goal that you have. That's why I call myself the Ultramarathon Mindset Coach. So if you feel like you're stuck, and if you think that I could help you, I offer a free 25-minute mindset reset call. It's a free call that I can schedule with you, 25 minutes. I will help you get clarity and help you start working on how to get past the biggest obstacle keeping you stuck. Now, I don't do my coaching for free, but this free call will give you some idea of kind of what I can do to help you, and if you've got something that you'd like to start moving forward on, schedule a call with me. I'd be glad to talk with you. Does not cost you anything. You can find this at ultramindsetpodcast.run. That's the link to the show notes. And if you're on a desktop or a laptop, you can find the reset call, the scheduling option, at the sidebar. If you're on a phone, you have to scroll all the way to the bottom, because the episode show notes are on the top, and you get to the bottom of the page, and the place to schedule that 25-minute call with me, also the Amazon affiliate link, and the Crush Your Goals course. Those are all there on the bottom. It will be on the bottom. So now let's get back to my conversation with Dave Daniel. I know you've done at least one of the Tough Mudder races. Did you?
Yep.
What made you decide to like branch out and jump into that?
It was another thing that had always been on the list. It's just like a marathon. It's like, yeah, one day I want to do this. And I've gotten close to signing up a few times before, but it was always going to be me just doing it by myself. And I just wouldn't. I always wanted to do it with someone else. I didn't want to try to go out there and do it by myself. And after the year I had and the running I'd done, I decided if something I wanted to do, I was just going to do it. And decided after racing and kind of proving myself there that I'd finally be able to go down and have some fun with it. And it was great. It was a really fun event. I'm not changing over to obstacle course racing, but it was a lot of fun. It was another adventure. And I ended up, one of my buddies that lives in Atlanta ended up coming out and doing it with me. So we got to spend a lot of good time together. And we did the Ragnar event together the week after that. So.
Right. A week after?
Yeah. Well, the Tough Mudder was only like 13, 14 miles.
Okay.
And a bunch of obstacles, and you didn't have to do the obstacles. If you wanted to skip them, you could. I did everything. I think I failed two of them. But it was very casual. So we took 6-7 hours to do it and had a great time with it. The Ragnar, it was just a relay race. We had, I think, six people on our team. So we, each only ran about 18 miles. So it wasn't bad compared to what I'd already figured out I could do. Mm-hmm. Running a couple, you know, 6 mile chunks was pretty feasible at that point.
So was the Ragnar on roads or was that a trail? Trail Ragnar.
It was a trail. It was also in Atlanta. I did the Tough Mudder in Atlanta and the Ragnar down there. It was like an old horse farm and they'd set up a bunch of obstacles and things of that nature. And, yeah, it was really good. It's very muddy, very muddy.
Yeah. So, and was the Ragnar a loop course or was it a point to point? Cause I know some Ragnars, it's like everyone's loaded up in a van.
It wasn't the point to point. Yeah. I heard that like so many people saying how lucky we were when we weren't piled in a sweaty van. I'm yeah. just walking around like I had no clue what they're talking about. And then someone finally filled me in, but no, it was just loops and you could actually set up tents or like canopies. So we had a couple canopies. We had a table set up under there. We were in there cooking food and we had tents for sleeping. So we'd sleep in shifts and whoever finished their loop would come wake up the guy for a couple loops down. And, we had a good little system and it was like tailgating with running. Mm-hmm. So it was a great time. It was much more, community based than trying to like really push my limits at all. It was just getting out there and having fun with
right.
it.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like the Ragnars that I've heard about, you know, there's a lot of camaraderie, whether you're in a sweaty van or in, you know, it's the
yeah. definitely if you're in a sweaty van, you have to be good friends.
So how long was the Ragnar, course? What was the length of the race?
I think it was like 118 miles, something like that. 115 miles. Something of that nature. I could be completely off on that.
So you still would run through the night then?
Yeah. So we each had like a day shift, a night shift, and like a dusk or dawn, or like super early morning. So still run like headlamps and out there in the cold yeah. in the middle of the night going up mountains.
And then so you'd also did the Mid-State Mile, if I remember right. Is that?
Yeah.
So when did that come in?
That was July of last year or June of last year rather. So I'd done long haul and I finally proved I could do 100 miles. So I'd done some other things in February and March and finally started like training appropriately. Had figured out heart rate training. I hired a coach that like kind of gave me a plan of like, hey, this is what you need to do to, you know, improve your cardiovascular health. And kind of looked at the mid-state mile again with a bloated ego of like, all right, I've done this. Like, I know I can run pretty quick miles. Like how hard could that be? That's what gets me in trouble.
If any ultra runner says, how hard can that be? That's usually a sign you're really in over your head.
Yeah. I always love the quote about entrepreneurs is like the entrepreneur is the guy who jumps off a cliff and builds a plane on the way down.
Right.
And that's how I've gone about ultra running. It's like, sure, why not? So I did that. And what you don't understand about the Mid-State Mile, unless you actually get out there, is it's a 1.1 mile loop. You have to complete it every 20 minutes. If you're not there, you're out. And each loop has 340 feet of elevation up and down, but it is not gradual at all. It goes straight up and it goes straight down. And it's two really tall hills and it destroys you very quickly. It gets your heart rate up and it just keeps it there. And if you haven't trained well for a long period of time or like several years, you just don't have the cardiovascular health to do it. So the downhills are so bad. The downhills would, you know how you always look forward to the downhill to kind of coast, let your heart rate come down. The downhills are just controlled falling and they would also get my heart rate up. So it's like one flat spot at the top, one flat spot at the bottom, another flat spot at the top were the only spots you got to rest at all. So I did, I think 26 miles, 26 point something miles. I did a marathon on it and just couldn't keep up. My hydration got off. I wasn't taking the right kind of electrolytes in. I was out there getting dizzy on the course and, it just burnt me out. So that was an amazing event. It's probably my favorite event I've ever been to. A bunch of us hung out after we finished our runs. We hung out, we supported the guys that were there. As runners would fall, we would put together ad hoc crews for the other runners that just showed up on a whim to run it. You know, we're getting stuff for them, getting their, making them food, getting them water and all that. And I think that one, they ran 130 some miles on that course, like 1.5 times the elevation of Everest. And every 20 minutes they were doing it, every 20 minutes.
Who was the one, who was the one who finally won that this year?
Chad's won it both years.
Chad ran it both years. Okay. Yeah. I knew Chad, I knew Chad ran Chad had won the first one. But yeah, I didn't know.
The first one I think was the week after our basic course. So he had just done the basic course with us and then went and ran this race like the weekend after. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah. And that's, and for people who may not know, the last man, it is a last man standing race. So you run until everybody's, you know, there's nobody else left.
You do that 1.1 mile loop every 20 minutes until one guy's left, and that one guy has to run an entire loop by himself. So if he also quits after the other guy quits, if he hasn't run an entire another loop by himself, he's not the winner.
Okay. I had forgotten that that was the case.
Yeah.
Cause I know that Big's Backyard is the one where that it kind of started the concept, at least as far as I know, started that concept, and his is a 4 mile and change.
I've heard of that one.
And it's before you have to start every hour. So there's a little bit of a difference because there are two different courses. At night they run on the road, and day they run on trails.
Oh yeah.
It was still the same thing. They do have to run the last loop by yourself. Before you're declared a winner. But
yeah. So. And I think like having a 4.1 mile loop every hour, like you can run that pretty quick and then take a break if you need to.
Yeah. Yeah. In the beginning.
Yeah. Sure. But if you have to go every 20 minutes, like you have to be a certain increment every 20 minutes, that cuts a lot of people out.
Yeah. You don't really get much of a break because even running a, 15 minute mile, on that course, a 15 minute mile would still be pretty aggressive.
Very aggressive.
And only having 5 minutes to rest instead of, I've heard about the course. Becca Jones described the course to me, and I thought, because I was like, one mile loop in 20 minutes, that sounds like it should be. Sure. Pretty easy. You can do that for a long time.
That's what I thought.
But then, talking about the hill, I'm like, oh yeah, that would,
And they put a chair halfway up that first hill with like a sign on it. Like, just take a seat.
Oh no.
I never sat in it.
That would be tough. But yeah, she said the hill was steep, but,
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly. And I'm going back this year. I'm not competing in it this year, but I'm going to crew a buddy of mine who's been training for it. I kind of realized how lacking my training was when I went the first time. So I got my foot messed up, got some plantar fasciitis going on last year right after that race, and just some rookie mistakes I was making. And had to take a break for a while, but I ran the Tennessee Mile at that same course in December, and it was cold, but it was a gorgeous weekend. And I did the 40 hour event, and just to, again, like, see, all right, I realized in June I got knocked out, but I could have gone further. I wasn't worn out when I was done. I needed 5 minutes and would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But this time, you basically have 40 hours to run whatever kind of race you want to. And, I end up doing like 68 miles or something like that. and 18,000 feet of elevation, or I could be misremembering that. It was a fair bit, 61, 62 miles, something of that nature. And took it easy. It was my first event after like letting my foot heal up and getting that worked on. And it went well, but I still have a lot of work to do before I can compete in the actual last man standing. So been working with the coach. We've got a plan laid out for this year. I'm finally going to get back to the Georgia Jewel this year, and I'm doing Hellbender in May, which is here in North Carolina. It'll be my first 100-miler in my home state. And then I'll probably do the Tennessee Mile again in December, probably the 40-hour again, just to dial in some training. Then do the Fierce Dragon 2023, and then actually try to compete in the Mid-State Mile in 2023.
So where is the Fierce Dragon at?
It is in Blairsville, Georgia.
Okay.
It is it's in the Vogel area, if you're familiar with it. It is 200 miles and 62,000 feet of elevation, 64,000 feet of elevation, somewhere in that neighborhood.
So it's 200 miles.
200 miles.
Okay.
And you get like 5 days to do it or something. I think it's five. You have to do 20 miles every 24 hours and you get 5 days to do it.
Okay.
That could be pretty far off. But yeah, that's the goal. That race kind of leading up to the Mid-State Mile and then seeing what I can pull off after some good training.
Yeah. There are a lot of 200 miles races that are coming, or 200 miles plus. And in fact, I think Cocodona, I can't remember how far that is. It was
220
miles. 220
miles.
Yeah. That's kind of the new distance for all of us who, the people who've got 100 miles, like, let's see what else is out there.
Yeah. I think the Fierce Dragon is going to be the biggest, like a 200 mile race is probably going to be the biggest distance I go after. I don't have after the Mid-State Mile in 23, I don't have another race lined up. I think I'm going to be working towards a run at the Appalachian Trail in 2024.
Okay. So run the entire trail.
Yeah. Do like a through hike in.
Okay. Are you going to go for an FKT on that?
No. Okay. I'm a rookie. I'm going to go to like, I make it to the other end and don't die.
Yeah. I've heard that that's a really good challenge.
So my cousin and I go out a few times a year and do like little 3-4 day backpacking trips, and she'll pick out spots along the AT and we'll go do little chunks of it and see it and check it out. So, I'm doing, I think 4 backpacking trips this year, maybe get a 5th in this year. So that's kind of where my learning and experience is kind of headed.
Not necessarily fast packing, but just a regular, just backpacking as a, are you going to try to make distance goals? And
I will have distance goals, but they will be modest. Okay. I'm not going to be doing a fast pack. I'll have like I just got a Hyperlite pack. The entire backpack weighs like 2 pounds and it's a 65 liter.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll try to work out of that and resupply at the little hostels along the way. And, I've got 2 friends that are running it now. They're fast packing it just in segments.
Mm-hmm.
Every few weekends, they'll do another segment. So been like talking with them and kind of figuring out where they're shipping stuff to, how they're doing resupplies, things of that nature. So I'll duplicate some of that and, just try to make it in a several month kind of a pace, not anywhere close to an FKT.
But you'll do it all at one time.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Okay. South to north or north to south?
I've not decided yet. I'm still learning about the best way to do it. So I'm listening to this guy, kind of why he likes it this way. I'm listening to this guy over here, why he likes it the other way. And have not yet determined. I hear most people are saying south to north, but yeah.
Yeah. And I have not looked at the details of it, but I know a guy who did it south to north, and I've heard other accounts of people. And that's kind of the way that most people do it. But, but yeah, I'd imagine north to south would have its own kind of quirks and challenges.
Yeah. I think the weather is the big one if you're doing north to south. So I haven't completely gotten my head around it. So don't know enough to actually.
Well, some of the people who do south to north end up with weather being an issue too, because it doesn't end at a pretty good elevation.
Cold,
yeah. Yeah. It gets cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's not appealing to me at all. I'd rather end hot.
So you're a hot weather runner.
Yeah. The hot weather, just because I spent the majority of my life in construction outdoors. And I went from like normal framing and like blocking and that kind of work, did some HVAC work, to then working in roofing, where if you're doing an asphalt roof, it's always 20 degrees hotter up there than it is on the ground. Mm-hmm. So you should get that sun on that asphalt, heats it up, and you're just baking up there the entire time. There's no shade. So I'm very accustomed to the heat. It doesn't bother me at all, which I thought was an advantage, but I've also noticed that I don't notice when my body's telling me stuff about the heat that I need to like change like my hydration and things of that nature. I'm just like, oh, I'm just used to this feeling. And it's like, no, you should be adjusting. So yeah, the hot weather doesn't bother me. I'm very intentionally learning to run colder. Like, in, we've had a few snowstorms here in North Carolina over the last few weeks, and getting out in those and running in 16 degree weather. I ran in the mountains on Tuesday. I was up in the mountains here in North Carolina, and my gaiter I was wearing on my face just froze solid as I'm running, because my breath is like exiting and it's freezing. So some interesting experiences, but
yeah. And there's here in Kansas, we have both extremes, and we have, you know, heat and humidity, and we have, you know, it's, well, this winter it was down single digits. And
it's too cold. And,
don't think it's been below zero yet, but last year it was below zero. We got down to six below last year.
Wow.
And so, our groups, we're going to kind of divide ourselves up between what we call ourselves team winter and team summer. And mm-hmm. So the team winter people are always, you know, like, yeah, let's go out and run it in shorts in the cold.
Yeah.
And,
can't do that.
And, then the team summer people are always, you know, bundled up and complaining about the weather. And then the team winter people complain about the heat and humidity. So.
Yeah. See, I'm the runner that's wearing like thermals underneath joggers, underneath a hoodie, underneath like a puffy jacket with a face mask and a beanie and gloves. Like, that's me. That's me running in the cold.
Yeah. And it's just kind of funny how each individual, your bodies kind of adapt to whatever. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, just what are you doing as far as your training for your ongoing, do you have any kind of routine that you're?
Yeah. So right now I'm doing strength a couple times a week, and I'm running the other 5 days. And so I'll do, my coach has a really good plan laid out of, you're doing this many miles and this, you know, consecutive days. And, you know, we have a high mile day here, and you're recovering here, and you're rolling yourself out. And, she made it really simple for somebody like me who's inexperienced to look at it and understand what I'm trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So just some moderate miles at a good heart rate, and doing the proper workouts to strengthen me where I need to be strengthened, and working on all those stabilizer muscles that I didn't know existed a couple of years ago. And doing that, we're working towards Hellbender right now. So kind of tapering up for that, and then cutting the miles a few weeks prior back down. So yeah, that's the general plan. I think two of the big things that have helped me more in recent time is I finally got my diet sorted out. Mm-hmm. I was way under eating for when I was training like larger blocks. I wasn't eating nearly enough. So I'd do my runs, and I'd feel like death. I'd feel exhausted. and I was just in a massive caloric deficit. I was trying to eat cleaner. So I was making the mistake of, well, if I can't eat clean, then, you know, I'm going to avoid eating because I'm out and I can't find the restaurant that has the clean food I want. I would miss so much eating that there was no way I was going to get enough calories in to support the level of activity. Mm-hmm. So I finally gotten that sorted out. I'm a meal prep guy now. Always have food in front of me. And sleeping, like finally sorting out my sleep of getting very consistently good sleep, has helped me recover a lot quicker and start to actually see some longer miles without feeling exhausted, and picking up a little bit quicker speed, which, you know, makes my ego happy. I ran a 50K in January this year, and it was moderate elevation. It was in the URA park near here. Is my first ultra in North Carolina, but it snowed the night before, and we had like 2 inches of snow on the ground, and like a third of the course was paved in like four to 6 inches of loose sand. So it was interesting, but I saw some good results there where I PR'd my marathon time. I PR'd my 50K time. I did the whole thing in under 7 hours, which for me was mind blown. I didn't realize I could pull it off that quick, but the training's paying off. I got done with it and I ran the next day and I felt fine. I wasn't destroyed. I could walk just fine. So yeah, excited about the improvement I'm seeing and trying to stay disciplined to increase that improvement for the Hellbender race.
That's cool. So if people wanted to get in touch with you or reach out, how was the best way for them to find you?
I think for the masses, Instagram is probably the only social media platform I really mess with a lot. I'm at Dave, DANENT for Daniel Enterprises. Sometimes I'm really active on there. Sometimes I'm not for several days when I'm in the midst of the grind. So, that's probably the best way to get in touch with me. Kind of like you did, just reaching out there.
Yeah. Well, cool. So before I go, appreciate that you've been here. But I have
appreciate the invitation.
Something that I do, before I let my guests go, I call them the bridge questions, three random questions.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, Bridgekeeper. I'm not afraid.
What is your must-have piece of running gear?
Must-have piece of running gear. I would say the Exo Skin wool socks they came out with, the Exo Toe wool socks. When I ran the Tennessee Mile, I ran all 60 some miles, one pair of socks. And when I took them off, my feet were like weirdly dry. They didn't have that damp anything. Mm-hmm. They were weirdly dry. I put some like salty britches, like anti-chafing cream on there too. So like no blisters or anything. Now, like if I'm doing anything over, you know, 10, 12 miles, I'm wearing those socks.
Yeah. And Exo Skin makes they make great products. So
yeah, I use their shorts a lot too. Yeah. Not always.
Yeah. So second question, what is the weirdest thing you've seen when you've been out running?
A weird thing I've seen. I've been freaked out by many of animal eyeballs in the middle of a night run. I don't know what would qualify as weird. All of us runners are weird out there. I had a few weeks ago, I had a possum like run right underneath my feet, just not paying attention. So I'm like jogging along. He just ran from beside me, just ran right up underneath me, and he stopped like right there and just looked up at me. Yeah, that definitely caught me off guard.
Yeah, that would that's kind of funny when the animals do that.
Yeah, typically they run off pretty quick, but this guy's in his own little world.
That's good. So, okay, the last one is what is a word or a phrase that kind of summarizes your philosophy of life?
I think a big one for me the last couple of years, and it tied into running. And you know how, like, as you run, like, you start equating everything from running with life and back and forth. When I was getting ready to run the Mid-State Mile, I'd written out some like little mantras and things to read or remember or recite as I was pushing through. And the big thing that I kept repeating was, I chose this. Like when it hurt, like I knew it was going to hurt. I chose this. Like when it was hard, I knew it was going to be hard. I chose this. And in life, whether you like what you have or you don't like what you have, like you have what you have based off of what you've done for the past, you know, 30 days, 45 days, so whatever you have is what you chose. And learning how to teach myself to choose new things has been a big theme in my life the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is a, cause if you chose it, you can make different decisions if you didn't, if you want something different. Yeah. Yeah, that.
Yeah, if you're responsible for it, then you have the ability to, you know, correct it, change it, adjust it, take care of it, handle it, finish it, whatever it is.
That is great. Yeah, I love that. Well, hey, thank you again. I appreciate you taking time to talk to me.
Yeah, Eric, man, I appreciate you reaching out and letting me be on the show.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. I know I say that every week, but I truly do appreciate you giving me your time, being here to listen to the stories that I share. I remember the show notes you can find at ultramindsetpodcast.run. It's not .com, it's .run, ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can leave comments, questions, and stories. Find the show notes for this and every other show. Also, there is an Amazon affiliate link if you'd like to support the show by purchasing products you buy through my affiliate link. I get a few pennies depending on what you buy. Also, there is the Crush Your Goals course there at the that if you're looking to get some progress on your goals and want it's the same kind of tools that I offer to my one-to-one clients. So it's quality content at a great price. You can also get a discount if you enter podcast, all capital letters, at checkout, you get 20% off. And there is now also a place you can book a call with me, 25-minute mindset reset call, absolutely free. I will help you take a look at your biggest place that you feel like you're stuck, that biggest thing that's holding you back. Help you get some clarity, get some traction to start moving forward, completely free. Remember, if you are on your phone, all of those things for the comments, questions, and stories, all of those things are at the bottom after all of the show notes. If you're on your laptop or a desktop, those things will be at the sidebar beside the stories. So just be aware of that. If you're on your phone, scroll to the bottom. You can find all that stuff. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode and know somebody who would like it, who would appreciate it, who might be inspired by it, take a minute, send them the link. Let them know what's going on here. I appreciate those of you who are sharing this podcast and talking about it. It does help me grow. And it is fun. The more people who are listening, the more kind of feedback interaction that I get, helps me keep going. And it's something that I hope will inspire others as well. Remember, an ultramarathon mindset is not just about running. Of course, I mean, we talk about running here. That's what we're about. That's what I love to do. But that same mindset is vital if you're stuck or if you have any kind of big goal, any epic thing that you want to go after. That ultramarathon mindset, the mindset to dig deep and keep going no matter what, and say I'm going to make it to the finish line. That is vital for life. Just anything that you see in life, you're going to face the same kinds of things that we face out there on the trail. The words saying, the little voice inside your head saying, you know, you don't have to do this. You can quit. And quitting in life doesn't necessarily mean ending your life, but there's a lot of people who are just, they've decided they've gone and done everything they want to do in life, and they sit down and they're just kind of waiting to die, waiting for their, you know, just kind of coasting. If you're one of those people, bless you. I'm glad you're here. And I hope to change your perspective to help you get moving again, because this is the place where we don't want to stop down, sit down and rest on our laurels. We've got epic things to do. If you want to send me a DM, I am on Instagram at Eric Dieter, or you can use the link ultramindsetpodcast.run, leave a voice message or text. I'd love to hear from you, hear your stories, or anything you have to say. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.